We'll continue the story of Chandrakanta in today's episode, with Tej Singh and Chapla continuing to fool ministers and kings, all in a race against time to keep Maharaja Shivdat at bay. Welcome to Stories from India. This is a podcast that will take you on a journey through the rich mythology, folklore, and history of the Indian subcontinent. I am Narad Muni, the celestial storyteller and the original Time Lord. With my ability to travel through space and time, I can bring you fascinating stories from the past, the present, and the future. From the epic tales of the Mahabharata and Ramayana to the folk tales of the Panchatantra, to stories of Akbar Birbal and Tenali Raman, I have a story for every occasion. The purpose of the stories is neither to pass judgment nor to indoctrinate. My goal is only to share these stories with people who may not have heard them before, and to make them more entertaining for those who have. In this episode, we are continuing the story of Chandrakanta. This is a fantasy slash science fiction novel written by Devaki Nandan Khatri over a century ago. If you haven't heard previous Chandrakanta episodes on this show, that is perfectly okay, because I'll recap the story so far. But I do recommend checking out the links in the show notes and on the site sfipodcast.com. Prince Virendra of Naugarh and Princess Chandrakanta of neighboring Vijayagarh were in love with each other. Both sets of parents had agreed that the two of them could marry. That's where Krur Singh threw a wrench into the works. And he did that by poisoning Chandrakanta's father's mind and turning him against Virendra. Krur Singh was the Vijayagarh minister's son, and therefore the next minister, because nepotism. He was also his father's assassin, and I guess a poisoning expert, because he didn't just poison the king's mind, but also his father's drink. Krur Singh was motivated by money, love, and power. He wanted to marry Chandrakanta, become the next king by hastening along his father-in-law's demise, just as he had hurried along his father's demise. Krur Singh, Virendra, and Chandrakanta all had these IR sidekicks who did most of the real work in the story. If you want a pop culture analogy, IRs were a mashup of Mystique from the X-Men, James Bond, and Sherlock Holmes. Because they could shapeshift, they had access to futuristic technology, and they were experts at chemistry. Rival IRs were constantly locked in a cat-and-mouse game, trying to trick each other. Virendra's IR, Tej Singh, had outwitted and imprisoned Ahmed, one of Krur Singh's IRs. Only Tej Singh and his brother-in-law and fellow IR, Devi Singh, knew about the beautiful valley where Ahmed was being held. Krur Singh's other IR, Nazim, had at one point been caught by Chandrakanta's IRs, Champa and Chapla. But Nazim managed to escape. A comedy of errors followed where Krur Singh and Nazim thought that they had captured Tej Singh and Virendra. But all they got out of it was embarrassment at being proven wrong. And they got punished for alarming the king. Out of deep resentment, and in order to raise his coup game, Krur Singh formed an alliance with Maharaj Shivdat of Chunargarh. While he was doing that, Tej Singh had secretly infiltrated Vijayagarh and completely destroyed Krur Singh's reputation. Mission accomplished, Tej returned to Virendra, where a mysterious passerby warned them of Shivdat's 7 Ayars, all but 2 of whom were on their way to help Krur Singh. That's where we'll continue the story today. Tej Singh sped away in the direction of Vijaygarh. The whole discussion with Virendra about passwords and such had taken much longer than he had hoped. But it was absolutely necessary. Like a wise person once said, strong passwords now prevent chaos tomorrow. Tej didn't want Virendra to be hoodwinked by one of Shivdat's IRs. He had told Virendra that Shivdat's IRs were some of the more competent ones. But he had not been entirely truthful. They were the most competent IRs. Jagannath and Badrinath regularly schooled IRs like Tej Singh. And even if by some miracle Tej Singh were to not fall into Jagannath's or Badrinath's tricks, the numbers were all against him. They might just overpower him easily, given their 7-to-1 ratio. Actually, there were 8 of them, if you count Nazim. Nazim wasn't the brightest, but he had managed to trick Chandrakanta's IR, Champa. So at least, he wasn't bottom of the pecking order. Tej Singh needed some kind of a tactical advantage. And he got it when he met the young man going in the opposite direction. More accurately, he got the idea after the young man stopped him and said, "Hello, Tej Singh." The young man had spoken in Chapla's voice. Let's go a few kilometers over and an hour earlier to Chandrakanta's chambers. Chandrakanta was talking to her dear friend, an IR. "Chapla, what do you think Virendra is up to this very moment?" "Sleeping, I imagine," Chapla said. "It's pretty late at night." Not the kind of answer a hopeless romantic like Chandrakanta expected. "You're wrong, Chapla. I bet he's sitting at his window, gazing in my direction, singing a song of love." "No, princess. It's rather chilly tonight. I reckon he's definitely in bed with a warm and comfortable blanket. Speaking of which, it's past your bedtime, my dear. Would you like me to read you a story?" "No," Chandrakanta protested petulantly. "I want to talk about Virendra." It took a lot of persuasion from Chapla before Chandrakanta went to sleep. First, Chapla had to read the story about the magic lotus pond and the blue tiger. And then she had to promise that she would get a message across to either Tej Singh or Virendra Singh about how much Chandrakanta was missing him. "It's been less than a day since you last saw him," Chapla reminded her. But Chandrakanta felt that it had been an eternity. Chapla was an IR through and through. She wasn't interested in these mawkish sentiments. She was a woman of action. She had to go meet Tej Singh, not simply to pass on Chandrakanta's message to Virendra. She needed to talk strategy over with Tej. So, after tucking in the princess, she swiftly transformed her appearance into that of a young man and headed in the direction of Naugard. That's how she met Tej Singh coming the other way. The two stopped for a talk. Tej Singh caught her up to everything, including the news about Shivdat's IRs. Chapla did not interrupt, except once to say, "Hey, what do you mean by a 7-to-1 ratio? Are you forgetting Champa and I?" Tej Singh offered the rather weak excuse that he was merely a product of his misogynistic era. But Chapla should not be offended, because they could turn it to their advantage. Shivdat's IRs were probably going to underestimate her in this story.
"Listen," Tej Singh said, 7-to-3 is still a pretty bad ratio for us. But this battle is not meant to be fought between only IRs. I can bet Shivdat and Krur Singh are plotting to take over Vijaygarh. And if the king continues to focus on Virendra Singh, he'll be caught unawares. First and foremost, I have to change the king's mind. The best way I can do that is to..."
"I know, you'll impersonate Queen Ratnaprabha," Chapla hastily interrupted.
"A sound idea, Chapla. Except, I can easily accomplish the same thing by impersonating the Vijaygarh Diwan, Hardayal Singh. I want you to come meet me at Hardayal's home tomorrow evening. We can discuss battle plans. And you can come as yourself. You don't need a disguise."
That seemed okay, but Chapla was unsure how exactly Tej Singh was going to take over the role of the Diwan. And what was going to happen to the current Diwan, Hardayal Singh? Was he going to be hurt? He was, after all, a good egg.
"I have plans," Tej Singh said,
but didn't elaborate. Chapla shrugged and said, "Fine. If you don't want to reveal your plans, so be it. But if you get caught, don't expect me to risk my neck rescuing you." We'll see much later in the story, but these were prophetic words. Chapla went back, completely forgetting to pass on Chandrakanta's lovey-dovey message to Virendra. Tej Singh got down to it immediately. He took on the appearance of a perfume seller. He also had lots and lots of bottles on his person that somehow hadn't smashed so far, despite him being on horseback. Quickly, with his extraordinary chemistry skills, he filled the bottles with all kinds of colored and scented liquids. Once he reached Vijaygarh, he walked the streets for several hours selling perfume. You may ask, was this method acting really necessary? Couldn't he have simply gone straight to Hardayal Singh's home and tried to sell him the particular bottle in his collection that was judiciously not marked chloroform? Well, you might as well ask if the evil magician from Aladdin would have been believed if he had tried to grab the magic lamp without being seen as a lamp exchanger first. It paid off. The perfume seller was finally invited into Hardayal Singh's home after hours of loud, enthusiastic selling to everyone on the street. Hardayal Singh and his dinner companions asked to try this flavor and that. Tej Singh had a set of discarded perfume strips, copies of receipts, and a hastily organized pile of cash. Observing all that, no one suspected any foul play. No one thought he was anything but a genuine perfume seller. Finally, Tej Singh produced a little vial of sparkly red perfume and held it up for everyone to see.
"This is the king of all perfumes. The rarest perfume in the world. This was crafted by Praful Singh, the master perfumer himself."
Hardayal Singh was surprised.
"Praful Singh? The scent sage? The aroma alchemist? I thought he retired.
Tae Singh said that he had. But it kept bothering him how he had never delivered his magnum opus. And he came out of retirement just to make this. To say that Hardayal Singh and his friends were intrigued was quite an understatement.
I have here a carefully folded certificate of authenticity,
Tae Singh added. But no one seemed to care about the certificate. They wanted the perfume.
Sure, it's yours for the measly sum of 1 lakh rupees.
Jaws dropped and a sudden silence fell at the table.
You should let us smell it at least, if you expect us to fork up that kind of money,
Hardayal Singh said. But Tae Singh seemed reluctant. I'm not supposed to, he said. But he gave in only after Hardayal Singh pointed out that they did this for chariots and horses all the time. Those were always sold after a test drive. So why not a bottle of perfume? So Tae Singh, still reluctantly, uncorked the bottle a tiny bit. Swiftly, he walked around making sure that every one of the guests had a whiff before offering the vial to Hardayal Singh himself.
Whoa, that does smell good, Hardayal Singh said. I love it. Can you wrap it up nicely in a gift box for my wife?
Then he hastily added,
I said, wrap the perfume bottle up, not wrap me up.
Because then Tae Singh had begun tying Hardayal Singh's hands and feet. The other guests were all knocked out cold already. And now the Diwan was drowsy and he dozed off. Tae Singh knew that he needed to move fast now. He swiftly took on the appearance of a dhobi, you know, a washerman. He put Hardayal into a sack, the way dhobis put their clothes. And from the outside, you couldn't have told that there was a bound and gagged Diwan in the sack and not someone's dirty laundry. The only awkward bits were that the dhobi was riding a horse instead of a donkey. And secondly, he seemed to be off to wash clothes at midnight. But seeing as it was midnight, no one was around to ask these questions. Tae Singh sped to his secret cave, where he had left Ahmed. He went through the elaborate ritual of opening the cave, and then left Hardayal Singh inside, unchained. There was no need to bind him. He was a harmless fellow. He just needed the Diwan in a place where he could not interfere with Tae Singh's plans. When Tae Singh sped back, it was getting close to dawn, which was worrisome because the others might wake up. He also had to stop to change his appearance into that of Hardayal Singh. Well, as it happens, the rest of them were already awake. They had been awakened by the maid who had come to clear the dinner table. Hardayal Singh's friends were all wondering why they had all slept off at exactly the same time. And more importantly, where Hardayal Singh was.
Right here,
Tae Singh said in Hardayal Singh's voice as he entered.
That perfume seller was a fraud. He knocked out all of you and tried to knock me out too. And he ran off with the silver.
No, he didn't, piped the maid. I counted all the plates and spoons myself. They're all there.
No, he stole a silver chain from me,
Hardayal Singh recovered quickly.
I chased him for a while, but he managed to escape. Well, there's nothing else to do tonight. You all had better go home now. We have court in a few hours.
And they did. This was the moment that Tej Singh had worked up to. He walked into Maharaj Jai Singh's court that morning. The Maharaj greeted him with a snicker.
I heard you got hoodwinked last night.
No, Your Majesty. I stopped him. But truth be told, it's you and I who are being hoodwinked right now.
What do you mean, Hardayal?
I mean, Your Highness, that I have very reliable news from my informers that Shivdat and Krur Singh have teamed up to topple you. In fact, some of Shivdat's IRs may be here right now, aiming their arrows at you.
Jai Singh frantically looked in all directions.
Guards, be alert!
He shouted. Instantly, all the guards obeyed. Except for one. He wasn't obeying. He seemed to be sneaking away.
There, that one! Shouted Hardayal Singh. Guards, hold him! He's the one over there!
Trying to point out an individual guard in a sea of guards all dressed identically was never going to be easy. But Hardayal was barking orders now. He ordered for the emergency lockdown protocol, for Jai Singh and his family to be taken to the secret underground bunker, while Hardayal investigated this. It took a bit of chaos, but the guard who was sneaking away was identified, and Hardayal Singh insisted on questioning him one-on-one. Turns out, there was a very honest explanation to all this. The guard had only been sneaking to the toilet. Hardayal Singh nodded his acknowledgement, but warned the guard against speaking about this to anyone. In fact, the guard needed to disappear. Right now, he couldn't talk about this to anyone else. The guard gulped when he heard that.
Please, sir, spare my life.
Of course, man. I'm not a villain. I meant you should disappear for a month or so. Think about it as paid leave. Don't talk to anyone. Don't be seen.
Hardayal helped the guard out of the back door in disguise. And then he went to the secret underground bulletproof, bombproof, and radiation-proof bunker to see the Maharaj.
It was an assassin. I got the truth out of him. Shivdat's guy. War is coming, whether you like it or not.
Jai Singh seemed to despair.
What am I to do? Shivdat's army is much more powerful than mine. And his IRs are legendary. I don't stand a chance.
You do, sire, Hardayal Singh said. Ask Naugard for help.
Jai Singh was aghast. After the way I treated them,
they'll laugh in my face. No, they won't, Hardayal Singh pointed out. My other spies, the ones in Naugard, are telling me they want to go back to being friends with you. They just want you to make the first move.
Then I will, the Maharaj said. Get me my writing pad and my ink and my quill. I'll dash off a letter full of olive branches.
He did. And Hardayal Singh insisted on taking the letter to Naugard himself. That was it. That was the outcome that Tej Singh wanted. He had no doubts that Naugard would jump at this opportunity to form a friendship again with Vijayagarh. Would that be enough to counter Shivdutt's armies and Ayyar's? Maybe not. But it would at least buy them a lot more time. Time that Tej Singh desperately needed. We'll see what happens next, but in a later episode. Previous Chandrakanta episodes are linked in the show notes and on the site sfipodcast.com. Check them out. In the next episode, we are continuing the Ramayana. Is this going to be the end of Indrajit? We are going to find out. Thank you all for the comments on social media and on Spotify's Q&A. I can't directly reply to the questions there, but I'll address them here, on this show. Kaira, I was thrilled to read your comment about the story of the creation of Indonesia. If there are any other stories that you'd like to hear, please let me know. And yes, I can do a Harishchandra story soon, and I will. Shweta, Kaveri, Bhumi, Rashi, glad you enjoy these stories. Jen, thank you for the kind words. PK Sahu and Anev, thank you for the support. Madhusudan Devnath, yes, that's another variation of the unicorn fish story. Some of it strangely overlaps with Noah's Ark story, which is probably a result of mixing of cultures and mythologies over the centuries. Thank you, remind me, for the generous praise. Libby, you're getting your wish. Ramayana is up next. Aman, I'm glad my podcast is a source of comfort to you on the long maritime expeditions of yours. Of course, I can do a Vikramaditya story next month. Hiranmay and Dash noted your request and I'm working on it. Samay and Hiranmay, yes, the merchandise and the Patreon site are all options. I just have to work out a few bits first. I want to make sure I do it right. Shalu, I'm glad you enjoyed the last episode. I appreciate your thoughtful feedback, as always. If you have any other comments or suggestions, or if there are particular stories you'd like to hear, please do let me know by leaving a comment or a review on the site sfipodcast.com, or reply to the questions on Spotify's Q&A. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook. You can listen to the show on all podcast apps, and that now includes YouTube. If you want to send me an email, it's storiesfromindiapodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get notified automatically of new episodes. A big thank you to each and every one of you for your continued support and your feedback. The music is from purpleplanet.com. That's purple-planet.com. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.